Despite my constant warning, some people daydream of a bucolic rural life. Some even contemplate going further afield and buying a vine-encrusted, ruined building in Italy or France. But our next guest has taken the plunge and gone off-grid in rural Portugal. Now, journalist Alice Leithart covered so many wars and horrors in the 20 years or so he was a foreign correspondent with the Beeb. He was shot at by the Taliban in Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. He was ambushed a few times in South Sudan. He also, would you believe, survived covering Hollywood as the Beeb's Los Angeles correspondent. These days, he can be found with his wife, Anna, in Alentejo, fixing solar panels, planting native trees, eating well, and fighting off wild boars in what is considered perhaps the poorest backwater of Portugal. He writes about his adventures in his blog Off-Grid and Ignorant in Portugal and has become a self-declared accidental sustainability fascist after just 8 months on the land. Congratulations on surviving so many wars, genocides and other horrors, Alistair, and welcome to our little wireless program.
Thanks very much. It's lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
Why did you take the plunge to Portugal?
Well, my wife is half Portuguese and half Swedish. I'm British. And when, after decades of bouncing around the world, living out of a suitcase and living in different places all the time, which was a fabulously exciting life, we just needed a home somewhere. And so of the three, this was the one that seemed the most exciting and interesting. I fell in love with Portugal about a decade ago when we first came to Lisbon, when I first came to Lisbon. And so we went on a little treasure hunt around Alentejo, as you say, the biggest province in the country. We decided that, seeing as that's where Anna's dad's family's from, that we would look for a ruin and a bit of land and we'd spend the next 10 years doing it up. And fortunately, we found a place that we fell in love with. And we ended up coming here a lot quicker.
You did MBA courses, both of you.
I'm sorry?
You both did MBA courses on entrepreneurship and the global wine industry.
That's right, yeah. So I was Africa correspondent for 4 years at the BBC. That was my last foreign posting. And then we had this, I got this fellowship at Stanford University for a year for journalism. But also it meant we could do courses in other things. I spent every morning learning Portuguese, or trying to. I'm still struggling to get there. It's a hard language to learn. But yes, we looked at entrepreneurship and I did some courses on sustainable agriculture. And so when we decided actually our life was going to be here to try and make it living in this rural wilderness / paradise, we had a little bit of preparation.
Alistair, did you suffer any sort of PTSD as a result of your professional activities?
I don't think so. You never know. These things can catch up with you later on in life. But I think the what you mentioned, my 4 years in Hollywood, which was probably the focus of potentially more traumatic stress than the wars, I'll be honest with you. I was much more comfortable running around Helmand Province than I was on the red carpet. But I think leaving it and dipping into it, war corresponding, is probably a good way of protecting yourself. A lot of people I know just really focus on war, and it does really affect them if you don't have other stories to tell. So I was very lucky in my career that I was able to dip in and out to cover these very important stories. And still, I hope to protect myself. I've not come here, as one friend suggested, to tackle my inner demons, but just to have a new challenge. And I'm learning a huge amount. It's actually very similar to being a foreign correspondent, moving to a different country with a different language and learning about the place, about the people, and about things I didn't think I'd need to do, like reinforced concrete beams and roofing.
I understand that a couple of weeks ago, men with large knives were on approach, but you didn't panic because they were cutting corks off the trees.
That's right. Yes, this is the time of year when the cork oak trees are harvested. Portugal and Alentejo is the centre of the global cork industry. The landscape is rolling hills and cork oaks. And so every 9 years, the bark is cut from these trees up to a certain level, and they scrawl the number of the year it was done on them, and then take that cork away for use in bottles, but also for other things like insulation and the like. So the sight of men wielding knives wasn't a surprise. A bit of a shock when we first came across them, but we realized what they were doing. It's a very unique kind of landscape and ecosystem we have here. It's called Montada. And it's based around these cork oaks, these hillsides, and these black Alentejo pigs. They're famous. They make excellent porco preto, black pork. And they eat the acorns. And it's just a beautifully sustainable environment that keeps everything ticking over. And it's nice to be a little bit part of that.
And I learned from you that there are efforts to make the area and the ecosystem World Heritage listed.
That's right. That's that's their hope and their intention. And it is a very large area that this covers. We also, as you mentioned, have wild boars that live on this landscape. And the first day we came here, actually, my wife saw a deer just sort of checking us out as it bounded down the slopes. So we are quite out in real rural nature. It's wonderful to be in one place as I haven't been for more than 4 years since I left home in the 1980s, to actually sit and watch the seasons change, to see the waves of spring flowers coming and going, carpeting the landscape. And it's just it's great to have this idea of off-grid living as well. We really have got to the point now where we switch the lights off as soon as we come out of every room, and we no longer take for granted the fact that water comes out of taps and power comes out of a hole in the wall. Because when we first got here, there was no instruction manual, and I managed to pretty much break everything possible. And now I've broken it and repaired it. We know how it all works. So next time it breaks, or hopefully I'll avoid it breaking next time because we've learned more about it.
You said in a conversation with my producer, it's like being in a foreign. It's like being a foreign correspondent, moving to a new country, trying to work out how it works, what's going on, what's happening. Who's who, and in this case, learning the language.
That's right. Portuguese is a tricky language. I haven't been a linguist really throughout my career. I'm a little bit of schoolboy French. And so I learned Brazilian because that's the language that when you learn Portuguese around the world or on apps, it's usually Brazilian because there's, 300 million of those and only 10 million Portuguese. But I think being here, it's amazing, this strange little corner of southwestern Portugal. We're 15 minutes from the beach, from the ocean. And in fact, an Australian friend came to stay recently. He's thinking about moving here as well. And he was brought up in Western Australia. And he said it really reminded him of that, the big ocean, the cliffs, and to a certain extent, the landscape as well. Just that if we need to go to the shops, it's 5 minutes away. And if we drive more than 3 or 4 hours, we run out of country to drive through. So that was a big difference.
Okay. Give me the demography. What sorts of people are living off grid near you?
Well, it's interesting because, as you said, this is a very rural sort of backwater. It's always seen as, I guess, Alentejo is the butt of jokes in the way that other countries are for different countries in Europe. But look, we've got a real, really interesting mixture of people. We came here. I can see a little yellow house. That's where Yap, the Dutch artist, lives. And then across the hill, there's a big house where they really do off-grid brilliantly. That's a retired Swedish and Danish couple. We're very close to a big worky town. So it sounds like it's all internationals, but there's a lot of Portuguese living and working in this area as well. And in fact, it was a Portuguese with some Australian connections. I like these Australian connections. I thought about this before I came on your show. He taught me how to build. Rui Dias lived in Sydney for 16 years. He's from this little town, São Teotônio. He came back here a few years ago with his wife and his three children, all born in Australia. And he was a construction supervisor in Australia, building huge tower blocks. And so he came over, and he's the guy who taught Anna and I how to use reinforced concrete and how to bricklay and how to do some carpentry. And so I think one thing about living off the grid is that people help each other. Everyone knows that it's hard, that, you know, if you get stuck in the mud, no one's going to pull you out. You can't just call 911 or 999 and someone's going to come and help you. You rely on neighbours, and it's a wonderful thing that exists.
Alistair, we're off-grid at our farm in the sense that we've got such rotten communications technology that it's very hard to get an email or make a phone call. But you're not that off-grid because you seem to have pretty good Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it took us a little time. When we first got here, I couldn't even have a phone signal at the house. We had to go up a hill and hold it up in the air just to get some kind of connection. But we stumbled through chance, as seems to happen here, about a guy who had this technology, which I first used in Afghanistan years ago, which is a radio link. So we have a small satellite dish which radio links to a distant mountain, and that provides fiber. So it loses a bit on the way, but we're better than broadband. We can stream the rugby, and we can talk to you quite easily down the line. Now I've said that, of course, it's going to break up and I'm going to cut off, but hopefully not.
Well, as an old Beeba, you are aware that the ABC is also forbidden from advertising, but you and I are now going to heavily promote the Hilux. Tell me about the significance of the Hilux in your life.
Yeah, it's a good point. We first came here, we bought the cheapest car we could find from a bloke in a supermarket car park for less than $3,000. It was a Land Rover, and it kept going just long enough, but we needed a grown-up car. And having spent years bouncing around deserts and, you know, seeing up front the Taliban and Al-Qaeda fighters with these vehicles, look, they all seem to drive Hilux Toyotas. The UN buys them, so lots of police in various random countries have them. The Taliban have them. They mount 50-caliber weapons on them. And it seems like they're pretty indestructible. So we learned the lesson. We thought, come on, ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the UN can't all be wrong. And so we have a bright red new Hilux, which we just got a couple of weeks ago. So hopefully,
but Alistair, Alistair,
in the winter we can get out.
Alistair, promise me you won't mount a machine gun on the back of yours simply to shoot the pigs.
The wild boar. No, I won't. I won't mount a machine gun. A friend of mine has a great setup. He's set about 100 metres from his land. He's set up a little place where the wild boars can come and feed, and some sensors. So in the middle of the night when they come, they ring him on his phone to say that they're there. And he goes out and he then selectively shoots one of the right family members because they are a pest here and a lot of people hunt them and eat them. I think that's a bit too technical for us at the moment. Our solution is to have a large horse dog called Garfunkel, because our first dog's called Simon. So Garfunkel is a Raffaello Alentejano. He's 65 kilograms. He insists on staying outside off a rope at night. And when we hear him barking, I think it's because he's battling the wild boars and forcing them onto someone else's land. They certainly haven't been partying in our lake like they used to since he came along.
Alistair, as a journo, you're used to sniffing out stories. What are some of the local issues that are worth attention?
There are a few. It's interesting. One we came across is an area, an agricultural area, and one was the idea of them turning these agricultural old-fashioned areas into ones where fruit is grown under plastic greenhouses. And that brings in migrant workers from elsewhere. So we have this interesting mixture of people coming from different parts of the world to work in Europe. And so our local town at the moment, it's Nepalis and Bangladeshis and some Sikhs who are moving here. It just adds to the multicultural nature of things. A lot of them, though, are working for very low wages. And there's a sniff of corruption among the sort of politics that brings these very large international companies to
Alistair, department. That's universal. We've got this, you know, parallel problems in Australia. It's appalling. And we've even had to introduce anti-slave legislation in this country. I understand solar panels are sprouting right, left and centre.
Yes, I mean, obviously we love our solar panels. They keep our phones charged and our washing machine going. But Portugal has made, as many countries have, a commitment to reducing its carbon emissions. And obviously it's doing a lot of that by solar. But rather than putting it on buildings in cities or giving people incentives to do it, they've taken a more industrial route towards that. And that's putting up hundreds of hectares of solar panels. Now, this isn't a desert. This is a place where a lot of people live. Admittedly, a lot of older Portuguese people live in this province because the young people moved away to find jobs elsewhere. But yeah, we didn't consider it to be a problem until our friends pointed out that 850 hectares of solar panels were being put up next to a village, a fraction of that size. And it just makes us think, well, that's a slightly different problem. We don't think that that this is an issue, but you know, how does that affect wildlife? How does it affect this unique ecosystem of black pigs and acorns? How does that heat the ground? How does water affect it? New questions that we all have to think about asking now that we're going down this route of putting these panels up all over the world. And what happens when they're obsolete in 5 or 10 years' time? How do they get recycled? It just makes us think a little stage further. I think everyone will say they're in favour of solar power, but perhaps done in slightly different ways.
You are, of course, permitted to register to vote. Well, not of course, perhaps surprisingly, at least in local elections. So clearly a few votes would be enough to vote someone in. So might you be tempted to become political in Portugal?
What about that? I think the idea that that so many internationals who have moved here and been part of this community see the kinds of issues that perhaps the sort of older generation of people here don't necessarily see, such as these big decisions that are affecting their lives. I think perhaps that means internationals could have more of a voice. Who on earth we'd vote for? There's nobody really who stands out as being a character of leadership. But perhaps just the fact that there are so many people here with different views registering, that in itself might help perhaps chevy along the bureaucracy and make the local politicians perhaps think twice before trying to railroad something through. The solar project I mentioned, it was approved on a Monday, and the only thing people heard about it was the Friday before. It wasn't an open process that was easily accessible. So perhaps having a voice like that might help. And actually, the bloke who runs the local radio station gave me a call the other day and said he was thinking about doing a program in English. So maybe I can lean back on my radio journalism from days past and have some fun on the wireless out here on off-grid in Portugal as well.
Alistair, you've made many analogies about living off the grid, including one I found most intriguing, that it's like golf. How?
Well, it's usually rubbish, and then something just works. You hit that really good shot. Not that happens very often for me because I don't play much golf, but you hit that good shot and that's just enough to keep you going. And you think, wow, if I can do that every time, you know, I'm going to be great at this game. And sometimes things do just go right. Mostly they don't. We didn't know how the water pipe connected a borehole on one hill to our water tank on the other hill. It was found when the digger dug it up and broke it, but we were able to fix it and the water started running again. And it's just, I think some things happen where you go, you know, one day we wake up and think we're completely insane trying to live here and do this. And what's a diplomat and a journalist doing in the countryside trying to do this thing? But sometimes things just go right.
The last thing I want you to describe briefly, because I think it's an important part of your story, is this ancient Roman method of building.
That's right, yeah. We want to build a little guest house here so we can, you know, have a business. I can do some journalism and we can live here for the rest of our lives, hopefully. And the way to do that, we thought, was to use our clay. It's called Taipa. It's the, as you say, a way of building the Romans developed. And it's basically you dig your own clay, you put it into bricks which are built in situ, a bit like rammed earth. I think you have rammed earth in Australia, very similar. But here it's all done by hand. It's all done by old, experienced Alentejo builders, and they come and they by hand stamp this thing down into bricks the size of coffins, my wife likes to say. It's a good way of visualizing how these houses are put together. It means that they stay warm in the winter, and they're cool in the summer. And so we also love the fact that when, you know, when we move on or we decide to leave, and we can just knock the houses down and they go back into the landscape again.
Sounds terrific. Look, thank you very much, Alistair, for giving us a glimpse into your off-grid life. My guest has been Alistair Leithead, and he's an off-gridder, a blogger, a journalist, and as you heard, a former BBC correspondent.